Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
It's estimated that 20 million Americans sell their own blood plasma for cash every year in a market that is barely regulated. On this episode, we'll get an inside look at the blood plasma industry and how it preys on some of the country's most marginalized communities.
Joining us is award-winning journalist Kathleen McLaughlin, whose new book is called Blood Money, the story of life, death, and profit inside America's blood industry. Kathleen, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
You write, "We've built an entire segment of global medicine upon the certainty that some number of Americans simply can't live on a regular income alone." That is a really sobering statement. You're saying they need blood money to supplement their wages and make their lives easier. Tell us more about this.
Yeah. So when I first got into this reporting, I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to find. I think like a lot of people, I had the idea that people who sell their plasma for money in the U.S. are the poorest of the poor, and that it doesn't affect anyone beyond the very poorest. What I found was quite surprising, which is that a lot of the poorest of the poor, unhoused people, for example, are screened out of the system. And in recent years, it's become much more common for middle-class people or people kind of on the fringes of middle-class to engage in this. As things have gotten expensive, we have higher housing prices, higher inflation, higher cost of education. You can now find, you know, millions of people around the country who have engaged in this practice before, primarily because they earn an extra income from it.
When I was doing research, I was curious to know how much the average person gets paid to give plasma each time. And it seemed like that really varied. What did you find from all of your research?
It totally varies. And it varies by the part of the country that you're in. And it really varies depending on how many times you go back. So the ideal for the industry is someone who goes and donates plasma twice a week. So you get optimized, incentivized payments for going more frequently. For example, in most cases, you will earn more for the second donation in a week than you earned in the first donation. So you might get $40 on the first donation and $50 in the second. You will oftentimes get an end of the month bonus if you go eight times, which is twice a week. So the system is really set up to try and financially encourage people to go as frequently as they possibly can. I would say kind of on that average, if you're doing it twice a week, you can probably earn somewhere between $900 and $1,000 a month. But again, it really varies by where you are in the country and how often you can go and which company you go to, how often you take advantage of their bonus points and bonus system. So it's really a gamified system for people.
Why is the practice of paying people for donating whole blood banned in the United States, but it's okay to pay for blood plasma donors?
Yeah, that's kind of the $10 million question, isn't it? I mean, I've been wondering that for years. And in all my research, I haven't found a deliberate open discussion and decision-making process that led to this. It almost feels like it was by accident that the U.S. decided to allow this decades ago, and the system grew and expanded to include a lot more people who were engaged in it than they were in the beginning. And we never went back and looked at it again and said, wait a minute, is this what we want to be doing? So it's kind of, it feels almost, like I said, accidental. And because selling plasma is so stigmatized and so underground for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't know about it. I think that has prevented us from having a larger discussion about whether or not this is something we want to continue to allow.
Why is it that pharmaceutical companies have overplayed plasma as this wonder drug when there isn't that much research behind it?
Well, I mean, in my case, so I am someone who depends on a plasma drug, and it does work like a charm for me. So for some very specific illnesses, plasma makes medications that are incredibly effective. So you have people with something called primary immune deficiency, which is exactly how it sounds. Your immune system is deficient. And plasma drugs are wonder drugs for these kinds of illnesses. There is separately kind of an offshoot in the research realm of attempting to make blood into a miracle substance that can turn back the clock and, you know, bring on the fountain of youth and all these other things. That's the stuff that doesn't have any real scientific grounding to it. But the things that most plasma is used for in the medical world in terms of medications, those drugs are actually pretty well scientifically founded and backed, and they do work. They're just not glamorous things. Like, you know, blood plasma isn't going to make you look 20 years younger, but if you have a chronic illness like mine, it can help you live a normal life.
Tell us more about the difference between whole blood and blood plasma, because it's kind of confusing, you know, for a lot of us who just think about rolling up our sleeves and, you know, having a needle inserted into a vein.
Right. So plasma is the liquid component of blood, basically. It's the protein part of your blood. So you take your blood out, and this is what happens when you donate plasma. They pull out your whole blood and they separate it in a centrifuge into parts. And there's the liquid part, which is kind of this yellowish, syrupy looking component. And then there are the cells, the white cells, the red cells, the platelets, and that's the other piece. So plasma is the liquid and the protein component of blood, if that makes sense.
And what are the big differences about how the industries, how the whole blood industry and the plasma industries are regulated?
Yeah, well, I mean, the number one thing you touched on already, which is you can't be paid for whole blood donation. It's also you can't donate as frequently if you're donating whole blood. And there is science behind that, because taking the entire package of your whole blood does leave your body more depleted than removing just the liquid plasma portion of it. So you can donate plasma a lot more frequently than you can with whole blood. But I would say the biggest thing is just the payment. You know, you can't be paid for whole blood, but you can be paid for plasma. What that leads to, I think, is a very weird stigma that surrounds plasma donation. So if you are selling plasma or donating plasma, it is often looked down upon or stigmatized, or we don't talk about it. And I think that's because it's associated with poverty. So you're only doing that kind of thing if you're not wealthy. Whereas whole blood donation, it's heroic. We think of that as being this great thing that you're doing for other people, right? But the truth is, both of these actions really do benefit people like myself. We just don't view them that way because of the way the systems are structured.
There are so many different questions, I think, that we have. There's so many different areas to get into with this topic. I mean, it's a real wide-ranging issue. But I'm wondering what the price difference is between what a person sells their blood plasma for and then what the blood industry can turn around and charge for it.
Sure. And this, I need to be kind of clear on this because it's complicated. The plasma drug that I receive once every 2 months or so costs $13,000 a dose. So you're looking at, say, $40 to $50 for a plasma donation. The end product made from plasma is incredibly expensive. So $13 or $13,000 per dose. But in the middle, there is a lot that happens. I mean, so my drug is made from the immune particles of potentially thousands of different people. It isn't one single plasma donation. The process is complicated. It's a proprietary mix of chemicals, depending on which company is doing it. There's the sterilization aspect of it. These drugs are quite safe, even though they are made from human blood products. So there is a major process in the middle. The question is, how much of that is profit that's going to people in the middle? And is there room to compensate plasma donors more? That's my primary question in all of this. And I don't know the exact answer right now.
I'm curious, what is it with insurance? I know you have insurance coverage, but is it something that, you know, makes it at all affordable, or is it still
I have very good insurance coverage. I mean, like everyone else in the US, the primary problem with my insurance right now is the deductible, but we all experience that, right? I mean, deductibles are quite high on most health insurance plans right now. And so meeting the deductible is the challenge, but my insurance is great. It covers the cost of the treatment. And I meet my deductible in January of every year, but because I was diagnosed with this so long ago, I have kept good health insurance coverage for a long time. So yeah, there have been challenges. I know I have heard stories of other people who are on Medicaid and other public systems who've had difficulties in getting these drugs covered, but it is, for my particular illness, it's the first line treatment. So it's very well established as being the thing that works. So insurance coverage does work.
You say there's no small amount of guilt in knowing that your continued health and ability to function relies on the financial hardships of others. Tell us more about the feelings you've wrestled with about that over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it is just the kind of thing that stays in the back of my mind, knowing that, again, if you go back to this thing with blood donation, you know, we valorize that. We really look up to people who donate blood on a regular basis, and they're doing it just out of pure altruism. Because the United States has decided to allow payment for plasma donation, we look at it differently, but it's also a different segment of the population, I think, who is engaging in this practice. I still think it's very altruistic for people to give up this substance, but in all the people that I've interviewed, there is a constant refrain: the primary reason they do it is because they need money. So the reason the United States is the biggest source of blood plasma for the entire world is because we allow payment and we have an awful lot of people who need extra money. So it's a very weird balance to be in, just knowing that this thing that you rely on comes at the expense of other people who are having potential hardships.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like there is that much known about what the long-term effects of giving plasma regularly are. Although I know short-term you said that, you know, you dealt with feelings of feeling bad that people felt ill just after donation.
Yeah, some people do and some people don't. Some people do it one time and can never do it again because they feel so sick afterwards. Some people will do it for years and years and years on end and feel completely fine. There aren't significant long-term studies that show what this might do to a person over a period of many years. So, you know, you have some plasma donors who will do this for 10, 15, 20 years. It just becomes part of their life. And we don't know exactly what that might do to people. The most common side effects that I've heard from people along the way are nausea, fatigue. It's real, and the fatigue in some cases can be absolutely crushing. So it's really all over the map. I will say the industry has gotten pretty proactive about advising people to pay attention to their nutrition if they're selling plasma. So they'll tell you to eat a high protein diet, make sure that you're hydrated. Like, they try and make sure that people remain healthy, but there haven't been really, I think, robust investigations of what this might do long term.
And I know you would even like to see a plasma minimum wage. Tell us more about that.
Well, this is something that Luke Schaefer at the University of Michigan suggested, and he runs a Department of Poverty Studies at Michigan, and he's looked into this extensively. He has a lot of thoughts about the whole system, and when I spoke with him, this really resonated with me because, as I was saying earlier, there isn't, you know, when I try and tell people the average payment for plasma, there isn't one. It's all over the place and it's variable and it depends how often you can go. So, you know, something I've heard from plasma donors that's kind of interesting is if you go to a center, you want to donate and a technician messes up the needle stick and bruises your arm, you'll get deferred for a number of weeks. So that source of income through no fault of your own disappears for a little while. I think if there were a more regulated payment system for donors, it would be better for everyone because people would know this is something I'm going to do. And here's the amount of money that I can get from it. I can rely on this as part of my income stream. The way it exists right now, even donating long-term can be precarious for people. So yeah, and the minimum wage, I think, would potentially better reflect the investment of time and people's health that they put into it. Because this is not a quick process. Most donors, it takes an hour sitting in the chair to have your plasma drawn because the blood comes out, it spins in a centrifuge and separates into parts, and then your parts re-enter your body. So this isn't as quick as donating blood. And so there is a real investment of people's time in addition to everything else. So I think that regulating it or setting some kind of a minimum wage, as Luke Schaefer suggested, does make a lot of sense.
You sat and talked with some of these people as you were doing your research for the book, and I want to know what stories really struck a chord with you.
I mean, kind of all of them did because this is so personal to me. So it's a little unnerving to hear people's personal stories. I think that one of the things that really struck me was all the college students I talked to who sell plasma, and partly just because they're so young. And the idea of doing this when you're 19 years old is a little bit scary to me. So I talked to one woman outside of a plasma clinic in Rexburg, Idaho, who the process can make you very cold because you have cold fluid re-entering your body when the blood parts go back in. And she was so chilled that her teeth were chattering throughout our entire conversation. And it was just, I just thought, now, why is someone who's this young feel like they need to do something that makes them this uncomfortable just to make money? So there were a number of conversations. I mean, all of them kind of left me a little, I don't want to say weirded out, but that's basically it. But I didn't, you know, there are plenty of people have their own agency. They're able to decide to do this. But I was left with the feeling from a lot of my conversations that this country has failed people economically, and we're just kind of leaving people to do whatever they need to get by.
And I know the number of paying plasma centers in the United States really jumped from 2005 to 2021. What happened to cause that?
Well, I mean, the U.S. is the biggest provider of plasma to the world. So in addition to people in this country who use these medications, we're providing other countries with that substance as well. I also just think there's been a massive increase in economic precarity in the U.S. So you have this ever-increasing demand for plasma around the world, and then you have Americans who are also in need of money. And I think it's just the combination of those two things.
How did the pandemic impact blood plasma donating?
There was a shortage So number one, there was a shortage for a while because the donors really did slow down going. I talked to several people who quit during the pandemic because they felt it was dangerous to be in close proximity to other people like that, and they didn't want to get COVID. So there was that aspect of it. There was also the offshoot that the U.S.-Mexico border was closed for a while, the land border. And one of the biggest sources of plasma in the United States is actually Mexican citizens who cross over to sell plasma in the U.S. The practice is banned in Mexico, but they can do it in the U.S. When the border closed, Thousands of people from Mexico had to stop coming over to do that. The other aspect of it is there was a batch, a big batch of clinical trials and attempts to use the plasma of people who had had COVID to treat COVID patients. So this is pretty old science and pretty established science using what they call convalescent blood or convalescent plasma to treat people who have a virus or to inoculate them. So there was a mass collection effort before we had vaccines and everything else. There was mass collection effort to acquire the plasma of people who had had COVID and use it in tests and studies to try and see if that could be used to treat COVID. The studies didn't really pan out to much of anything, but in the collection attempt, people who had COVID were getting paid a whole lot more money for their plasma. When I was reporting in Rexburg, Idaho, in this college town, there were actually rumors, which I was never able to confirm, that students there were trying to get COVID so that they could sell their plasma for more money. The rumors were so prevalent that the university actually had to put out a statement telling students not to try to get COVID so they could sell their plasma for more money. So there were all sorts of weird little offshoots around the plasma industry related to the pandemic.
I was just really surprised to know how big of a thing it is for the plasma donated to be exported overseas. That hadn't even occurred to me. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think most people don't know that. I think that most people in Europe, where a lot of this plasma goes, don't know that. I have talked to people in Europe, specifically Switzerland and a few other countries about this system, and they're appalled to know that Americans can get paid for plasma. But in fact, that plasma is going to medication and companies that exist in Europe. So one of the big players in the plasma industry is a Spanish company. Another one is Australian. These are really global businesses. And it just so happens that the United States is the country that has a large population that can be compensated for their plasma. So we have ended up being a big source of the world's plasma.
What is now done to kill viruses in blood plasma that wasn't done in the early years of the AIDS crisis?
Yeah, it's mostly treating with heat. So when scientists figured out, and, you know, I don't know, it's a funny thing, we've come such a long way, but hard to imagine in the beginning, scientists didn't know exactly that AIDS was transmitted by blood. Of course, everyone knows about bloodborne viruses now, but back then in the beginning, there wasn't a lot of knowledge about that. They have since figured out that treating plasma blood with heat kills viruses. So the exchange of this substance between people, there have been a lot of people 30, 40 years ago who were infected with HIV via plasma made medications. That doesn't happen anymore because we figured out how to kill the viruses with heat. So it's a pretty simple process, and it made a huge difference in the safety of these drugs.
You say that when you started to write the book, you were writing it for a small marginalized section of people. But once you did the research, once the book was written and you got all your thoughts out, it really was for a much wider audience. So who do you hope reads it now?
Well, I mean, when I first started, I kind of thought it was a science book. I thought it was going to be a book about this very niche industry and niche medication and kind of a quirky thing that had happened and was still continuing to happen. And then when I realized how big and widespread the industry was, I realized that it affects a lot of people in the United States. And I guess my hope is that people will read this and think more deeply about our economic systems and the people who are being failed currently. So, you know, why do we have a huge population of college students who need to sell their plasma? Why do we have middle-class people who are working full-time jobs who need to sell their plasma to go on vacation? Are we okay with being that kind of a country? So it went from being a science story into being a story about the failure of our economic systems. And I hope that people will read it with that in mind. I deliberately tried to not make it overly graphic, if that makes sense. So there isn't, you know, it's not a gross book, I don't think. It's really much more about our economic fault lines and our economic failures than it is about the specifics of medicine and blood.
Yeah, it really is a fascinating story. And you point out that the United States is one of just a handful of countries that hasn't banned the practice of paying for plasma giving. I'm wondering why other countries have banned it and why we haven't.
Well, I mean, that really is the big question in all of this. Other countries have banned it because it's seen as coercion. So you're essentially coercing people to give up a bodily substance. And I think that other countries have been able to maintain their bans on paying for plasma because the US allows it. So we kind of provide a lot of other places with this substance that they can't get from their own citizens because the practice of paying people is banned. I don't necessarily have a problem with paying people if this is, you know, what needs to happen to make essential medicines, but I think that it needs to be a fairer system and a more transparent system for people who get paid.
Kathleen, at the end of each show, we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what is the most life-altering piece of information that nobody told you about plasma and the plasma donation, the whole plasma industry that you wish you'd known 10 years ago before you wrote the book and you'd like to share to our audience because they might be in your position, might have an illness that requires plasma donation?
Yeah, you know, I think probably my experience is unique in one way, which is I lived in China for 15 years. And in the time that I was living in China, I wrote a lot about this thing that China had tried to do. They tried to create something called the plasma economy, where they were paying poor farmers for their blood plasma and making medications with it. And I thought this was just the most dystopian, weird, creepy thing. Oh, that would only happen in China. And then I moved back to the US and I discovered we had created the plasma economy without that many people noticing. So I think for me, the altering thing was that I had this perception of the United States as being a fairer country to poor people, essentially. And that didn't turn out to be entirely true.
And how can people connect with you on social media and the internet and learn more about the book and your work?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is KEMC, and I have a Substack under the same name, KEMC. And the book is available everywhere and from Simon & Schuster.
Well, Kathleen, we thank you so much for joining us. This has been fascinating.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
Again, our thanks to Kathleen McLaughlin, whose new book is called Blood Money, the story of life, death, and profit inside America's blood industry. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.